All right, welcome everyone to another deep dive. Today we're tackling a really crucial case, Obama for America v. Husted, a Sixth Circuit decision from 2012 that digs into, well, how seemingly small differences in election rules can actually lead to some pretty big legal battles.
Yeah, it's really interesting, you know, because what's at the heart of this case is this super specific issue. Like, leading up to the 2012 election, Ohio had this rule where military voters could cast in-person absentee ballots, right, up until Election Day. But for, you know, everyone else, that option ended the Friday before.
Right, so we're literally talking about just 3 days, a three-day window.
Exactly, just 3 days that were open for some voters but not others. And, well, unsurprisingly, this kind of difference got some attention. The Democratic Party actually filed a lawsuit arguing that this unequal treatment, right, violated the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment.
Yeah, that makes sense. Like, their point was, if everyone has the same fundamental right to vote, why the discrepancy in how they get to exercise it?
Right. And, you know, for today's deep dive, you've pulled together some great resources, I gotta say. There's background on the case itself, a really nice case brief breaking down all the legal bits, and then a standard legal brief that lays out the core arguments and the court's decision.
Exactly. We've got a lot to work with today, and the goal really is to kind of synthesize all of this, especially for our law student listeners, to give them a clear picture of the case, what it means, and the big legal ideas at play.
Absolutely.
Okay, so let's get into the details of this Ohio law. Like we said, the main issue was that three-day gap in the deadline for in-person early voting. Military and overseas voters had until Election Day, but everyone else had to vote by that Friday before.
Yeah.
And even though it seems like a short time frame, it definitely sparked a big legal debate.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And if you think about the basic idea of equal protection, you can see why this would raise some red flags. You've got two groups of eligible voters in the same state facing different rules for the same action voting.
Yeah, that's a good point.
The lawsuit, right, the one filed by the Democratic Party, really zeroed in on that disparity. They argued that it put an unfair burden on the voting rights of non-military Ohioans.
Okay, I get it. So what was Ohio's reasoning for this difference then? Like, what did they say justified treating these two groups differently?
Well, they offered a couple of main justifications. The first was that military and overseas voters face unique situations, right? Deployments, unpredictable schedules, all the difficulties of getting and sending back absentee ballots from far away. They argued that those voters needed more flexibility to make sure their votes could be counted.
Okay, that makes sense. Those are definitely real challenges.
Right. And second, Ohio claimed that local election boards needed those 3 days before the election as a kind of quiet period to get everything finalized, you know, like reconciling voter lists and making sure things run smoothly on Election Day.
I see. So those were their arguments. But how did the Sixth Circuit actually evaluate them? I know the Anderson verdict test is super important in these kinds of cases.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's like the go-to legal framework.
For anyone who needs a refresher, can you explain what that test involves? Like, what's it all about?
Sure. The Anderson verdict test is basically how courts figure out if a state's election law is constitutional. It's kind of like a balancing act. The court weighs the burden that the law puts on voters' rights against the state's interests in having that law.
So it's not like an automatic rule that any burden on voting is unconstitutional.
Exactly. It depends on how serious the burden is. If a voting law makes it really hard to vote, the state has to prove that the law is super specific and targeted to address a really, really important need.
Okay.
But if the burden is less serious, then the state just needs to show that the law helps achieve a significant goal and that it's a reasonable and fitting way to do that.
Gotcha.
And in Obama for America v. Husted, the Sixth Circuit actually decided that getting rid of those 3 days of in-person early voting for non-military voters did create a significant burden on their right to vote.
Interesting. So they said it was a significant burden. That seems pretty key. So with that decided, what did the majority opinion have to say about Ohio's reasons for having different deadlines? The one written by Judge Clay.
Right. Well, Judge Clay and the majority were pretty critical of Ohio's reasoning. They basically rejected the argument that military and non-military voters are in different situations when it comes to in-person early voting.
Okay.
Their logic was pretty simple. During early voting, both groups are physically in Ohio, and the act of casting a ballot in person is the same for everyone. So making a distinction just because someone is in the military for this specific way of voting didn't hold up for them.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. If someone is in Ohio and can go vote in person, why should their job or background decide when they can do that during the early voting period?
Exactly. And then the court looked closer at Ohio's two main reasons. For the unique challenges faced by military voters, the court agreed that those challenges exist. But they said Ohio hadn't given enough proof to show why those specific issues meant military voters needed 3 extra days for in-person voting that everyone else didn't get. Like, there wasn't solid evidence directly linking those challenges to the need for that specific 3-day window for in-person voting.
So Ohio couldn't just say military service is tough. They needed to provide, like, actual data or specific examples to prove that those extra 3 days of in-person voting were crucial and that an earlier deadline wouldn't work.
Precisely. The court held them to a higher standard, and they looked at the quiet period argument the same way. The majority pointed out that some local election boards in Ohio were already allowing in-person early voting during those 3 days.
Oh, wow. So they were already doing it.
Yeah. So it weakened Ohio's argument that all counties needed that time to prepare.
Right. It poked a hole in their reasoning.
And basically, Judge Clay's majority opinion boiled down to this. There's no good reason to stop non-military voters from voting during those 3 days. The state just didn't give convincing reasons. And, you know, this highlights a really important point. States can't just rely on general statements about certain groups of voters. They need specific data to show why a certain difference in treatment is necessary for a really important state goal.
That's a really good point.
Like, for example, Ohio might have needed to show data on actual delays in getting ballots back from military personnel overseas and how that was directly linked to the earlier deadline for in-person voting for everyone else.
I see, to make a stronger argument. That makes a lot of sense. Okay, so now let's talk about Judge White's dissenting opinion. He thought the law was unconstitutional too, but he had a different view on what should happen next, right?
Yeah, that's right. Judge White wrote a partial dissent. He agreed with the majority that the Ohio law violated the Equal Protection Clause, but he disagreed with the remedy, like what the court should do about it.
Right, so the remedy means what the court should order to fix things after deciding a law is unconstitutional.
Exactly. Judge White wasn't happy with the court directly ordering that the earlier early voting period be reinstated. He thought it was better to send the case back to the lower court and let Ohio's legislature and election officials try to fix the law themselves.
Interesting. Why did he think that?
He was concerned about federal courts getting too involved in how states run their elections, like overstepping their role.
So he thought the state should have the first chance to fix the law.
Yeah, that was his view. He thought it was more fitting for the state to come up with the solution.
Okay, I see.
But the majority took a different approach. Their priority was making sure people could vote right away and preventing anyone from being unfairly kept from voting. They argued that stopping eligible voters from voting during those 3 days would cause harm that couldn't be fixed later. They were focused on the immediate impact on voting rights.
So a difference in priorities.
Yeah. Judge White was more concerned with the process and the role of the courts, while the majority was focused on voters. And his position can be summed up as, you know, let Ohio fix its own problems. You know, when we talked about the significant burden earlier, we can guess that the court probably thought about things like, you know, maybe the different rules for different groups would confuse voters, or people with busy schedules who needed those last 3 days to vote in person would be left out, and just the general importance of making sure as many people as possible can vote in a democracy.
Right. Well,
and, you know, that assessment of how big the burden was is what led them to scrutinize Ohio's reasons more closely. Because it was considered a significant burden, they held Ohio to a really high standard. The state needed to have a very solid reason that directly addressed a specific problem, and the majority just didn't think they did that.
Okay, that helps explain the different opinions.
Yeah.
So looking beyond this specific election in Ohio, why is this case Obama for America v. Husted seen as such an important one for voting rights in general?
Well, this case is a really important example of how courts decide if state laws that create different rules or opportunities for different types of voters are okay. It reinforces the idea that states need to have strong evidence-based reasons if they're going to treat different groups of voters differently, even though they have a big interest in making sure their elections are well-run and secure.
And the court really dug into the evidence or lack of evidence that Ohio provided, right?
Absolutely. The Sixth Circuit was skeptical of Ohio's justifications, and that highlights how crucial it is for states to back up their claims with hard proof when they're treating voters differently. Just saying there's a need isn't enough. They have to show it with solid evidence.
That makes sense.
And on top of that, the Supreme Court chose not to stop the Sixth Circuit's ruling, so the injunction stayed in place for the 2012 election. That basically gave more weight to the Sixth Circuit's analysis and how they use the Anderson Burdick test in this situation. This case really cemented Anderson Burdick as the main framework that courts use to look at these types of voting restrictions that involve equal protection arguments.
So for our law student listeners out there, what's the most important takeaway from this case?
The key lesson here is that equal protection in voting rights isn't just about whether a law was made to discriminate against a specific group of voters on purpose. It's also about the effect the law has on different groups, whether it puts an unfair burden on them. Even if a law seems harmless or even beneficial for one group, like they argued with the military voters in this case, it can still be unconstitutional if it creates an unfair and unjustifiable burden on another group. Remember to use the Anderson Burdick test when you analyze these cases, and pay close attention to the evidence, or the lack of evidence, that a state uses to justify treating different groups of voters differently.
So, to sum it all up, our deep dive into Obama for America v. Husted has shown us a really important Sixth Circuit decision that struck down Ohio's different in-person early voting deadlines for military and non-military voters. The court decided that Ohio's reasons for this unequal treatment weren't good enough to satisfy the Equal Protection Clause using the Anderson Burdick test.
Right. And you know, this brings up an interesting question to think about as you continue your legal studies. Considering the Anderson Burdick test and how much the court focused on Ohio not proving that its voting restrictions were necessary, what kind of data or evidence do you think states would need to show today to successfully defend similar differences in their election rules?
That's a great question to ponder.
Yeah, think about how the legal principles we talked about today connect to the current debates about voting access and how elections are run in our legal system right now.
Thanks for breaking down this complex case. It's been an insightful deep dive. Until next time, keep those legal minds sharp.
Absolutely.
And remember, the law is all around us, so stay curious.